Hey, redesigners, and welcome back to another episode of Women Over 50 in Life Redesigned. This is Shelly, and I'm your host for the podcast. I'm really glad you have joined me today because I'm talking to Silky. Silky is a grief specialist and inventor of the Grief to Love Blueprint. But before we get started with Silky, I want to remind you we have a Facebook. I keep saying that we have a off Facebook community for women over 50. It's a membership community. I've got the link down below in the show notes. If you want to redesign your life and want to do it surrounded with other women who are doing the exact same thing, redesigning their lives, support, accountability, click the link below. Come join us. Also down in the show notes, Silky has a special gift for my listeners, her free grief roadmap. You can download that. Go to the link down below, grieftolove.com/Shelly. Silky and I talked about grief, and she understands that there are many misconceptions about grief and that there's a lot of unhelpful and even harmful grief advice. There's a lot more to grief than just five stages. 4 years ago, Silky developed an even deeper understanding of grief when she lost her only sister to cancer and then supported her parents and brother-in-law through that loss. Also, not having seen her parents due to COVID travel restrictions for 2 years, Silky got the 4 a.m. phone call no one wants to get on the flight nobody wants to be on. Only 10 days after Silky's therapy dog passed, Silky's dad had died suddenly. So Silky really knows what grief feels like and what bereaved parents and widows go through. It's just a really great conversation, and Silky and I walked through the grief I experienced when I lost my mother. It's been almost 30 years ago. She died suddenly, and I wish I had known Silky then. I probably would have been able to manage my grief a little easier. Okay, friends, on to my conversation with Silky.
Well, I'm so excited. I have Silky joining me this afternoon, and she has graciously got her self together at 6 o'clock in the morning down there. So I really appreciate that. And I'm just going to let you've got a super interesting topic. And I know as we go along, I'm going to have lots of questions for you. So I'm just going to let you introduce yourself. Tell us whatever you want to tell us, and then your story and how you got to being the expert in the handling of grief that you are today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. And so my topic is grief, and I help people deal with grief in a more resourceful way. And I'm a classical trained clinical hypnotherapist and NLP practitioner. So I always work with the subconscious processes. And I have a brick and mortar business, as well as I work with online clients. And I've been working as a hypnotherapist for quite some time, and a lady came to see me, and she said that she wanted to stop drinking so much. And when I asked her, since when has it been a problem? And she said 2 years and 3 months. And I asked her what happened at that time. And she said, that's when my husband passed away. So on the outside, she was coping with life. She was going to work. She was raising the kids. And as soon as the kids were in bed, in order to just deal or not deal with what was going on, she was just numbing and drinking 1 to 2 bottles of wine every single night. So at that moment in time, I actually realized that this was not a drinking problem, but this was a grief problem. And so I asked her whether she would be prepared to work on this. And I asked her, how does she remember her husband? And she said, spontaneously, the only memories that come to mind are the memories of the last moments or the last days or the horrible stuff, basically.
Yeah.
And I said, do you get spontaneous memories of something? And she said, occasionally I do, but it's not like I'm driving past somewhere and I go, yeah, I forgot about this. We've been there 27 years ago or whatever. She said, I don't have any of that. And the memories I do have, they're more like a photograph. I remember it because I have a photograph of it. Mm-hmm. And I said, would you like to remember your husband in a more wholesome way, in a way where you can actually drive past somewhere and spontaneous memories pop up. Maybe in a way, I know this is not an appropriate analogy, but maybe there is somebody that you knew as a kid, maybe one of your grandparents, or maybe a particularly wonderful teacher. You've got no idea what happened to this teacher, or your grandparents have passed away. But when you remember them, you get a warm feeling. And you remember them warmly, you get a good feeling, get a smile, and you just still feel connected to them. And she just looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, that actually is possible once we start working with the unconscious processes. And that really was my first completely unintentional grief client that I ever had. I wasn't advertising for grief. She didn't come to see me about grief. But of course, once we started working through it with the unconscious process and hitting all of the, because the unconscious quite often doesn't really want to let go. As people always say, you just gotta let go and move on. No, you don't. The unconscious will fight you tooth and nail to not do that. And so that's how I started my work with grief. And I, as a therapist, I was helping people a lot with grief. And then, what is it now? 4 years ago, my sister passed away. I only have one sibling. This was my older sister. And we were very close. And she'd been battling cancer for a number of years. And in the end, she didn't make it. And then, of course, seeing my parents losing their daughter, her husband now being a widow. And somehow I had promised my sister that I would help everybody. I didn't know how to, but that I would help them, because my sister loved life. Even in her cancer treatment, she was the sparkle of the hospital. All the nurses loved her, adored her, because she was always just happy and grateful and cheery. And yes, of course, she did have her really bad moments, but she would always pick herself up again. And because she loved life so much, I felt like we honored it to her to somehow be able to enjoy life again. And so I had to dig a hell of a lot deeper and get even better in helping people through grief so that I could be able to help her husband and our parents. Yeah, and that's how I started to dig even deeper in grief. And then I was asked by the Australian Hypnotherapist Association to be a speaker on grief for their World Congress in 2019. And yeah, presented my blueprint that I developed from all of that to an international audience, which was just such a wonderful experience. And I was just so glad that I could spread it with so many therapists.
That's amazing. Congratulations. Good for you.
Thank you.
As you were talking, Silky, a couple of things popped into my head. The whole numbing with wine or whatever, it's never really what, the wine's never really, that's a surface thing. Like she said, my problem is I'm numbing with wine. It's never really about what it's about, as I've come to find over the years. We think it's about the wine, but when we start digging deeper, we find out that we're just covering up a whole bunch of stuff that's been going on for lots of years. I saw this TED talk a few years back, and I thought it was so interesting when you were talking about your sister dying and leaving behind a husband. The woman talks about how she lost her husband died. I don't remember how he died. And that people would say to her, you'll get over it, or you'll get married again, and you'll have another spouse and all that. She did. But the really interesting thing she said, Silky, was, how'd she put this? Her husband who had died, followed her along her life because he was a part of who she was. It was like the husband, because of the husband, she had her son, and because of the son, this, and then she met another man that she eventually married. But it's like when they say you'll get over it, it's like all of a sudden we're just supposed to like forget and be like just compartmentalize, whatever that, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
It's a box.
Yes.
Here's my husband who's deceased. Here's my new life. I don't think that's very healthy.
No, it's not at all. Because I don't know, society always expects the grieving person to go back to the person that they used to be.
Yeah.
So that they'll be okay again. But that would, the unconscious process, because the unconscious processes are there to protect you. Yeah. That's the biggest job of the unconscious. And of course, you have the person who has lost somebody, they've already lost so much. So of course, if I was to let go of the deceased person, if I was to move on, I would lose even more than what I have already lost. And the unconscious would never, ever allow me to do that. So of course, and I think I know the TED talk that you're referring to, and it's beautiful because of course we need to allow the grief to change us. And without the other person, we wouldn't be who we are today.
Yeah.
The other person that we have been with, the deceased person, has formed us, has changed us. We've shared so many values with them. And of course, through all of those experiences, we are the person that we are now. And we need to honor that. And I think also any spouse or anybody who would even think about getting together with a bereaved person needs to be aware of this. Yeah. That there will always be this other person that is part of their lives. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that this person loves the new person any less. No, not at all. But it is, they are still part of them.
Yeah.
And yeah, grief changes us so much, and we need to allow grief to change us. And I think that is also where a lot of the unconscious struggle comes in. Because consciously, rationally, logically, people know what they should be doing, but they just can't do it because there are all of those unconscious objections. Because yeah. The unconscious just wants it just to stay the same and doesn't want to change and wants the old thing back. So yeah, it's a beautiful TED talk, that one.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. When my mother died suddenly when I was 32 and she was 62, and it was unexpected. She died in her sleep. Although I think she probably had some health issues. She'd had health issues throughout her life. Like she had lupus and various things. And I think that something was going on that she hid from us. But anyway, we weren't expecting her to die in her sleep.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. And it's been a long time ago, but I remember my mother-in-law at that time kept telling me, "I'll be your mom now." And first of all, I didn't really like her, you know? But just feeling that, well, now your mom's gone, so you need a new one, even though I was an adult. But as I was thinking about that and I moved through my life, I don't want to say I really attached myself, but I found these women who became like a mother to me, just like spontaneously, like out of the blue. And at first it was really hard because I thought, I've lost my mother and what if I lose you? And I did end up losing both of these women who I loved. And I kept saying, oh my gosh, you're my third mother or whatever. Yeah. But one of the things that I grieved, and you may be able to talk about this a little bit, was that I did not have a good relationship with my mom because just of various background things, which I'm not going to go into. My listeners know all about it. But so my grief, a lot of it, Silky, was not being able to have a a mother-daughter relationship that I longed for did not come to fruition. And so yes. That was what I grieved. And I had a lot of people say to me after mom died, even 5-6 years later, boy, your mom's death really changed you. You became a different person. And it was because, Silky, I know I'm giving you a lot of stuff to talk about, but a lot of it was, I changed because I didn't want to die at 62 and think, oh my gosh, what have I done with my life? So I know it's a big jumbled mess.
Yes.
But that's just a lot of, so I guess, and you probably see this too, is that it's just not a person that dies. It's like all this other stuff that I felt going on in my life. And I know that the women listening to my podcast, the women over 50, I hear it all the time, Silky. They're just losing people, spouses, parents, kids, for God's sakes, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it's the age. It really is the age. Yeah. And I think, yes, you have given me a lot of stuff to talk about.
Sorry about that. I just sort of went on a roll and then I can't quit.
So I think one of the things that I do in my, in my grief to love programs as well, is what you also did in transferring some of those values that you either had with your mom or that you had hoped or dreamt about at some stage having in that relationship. And you took those values and you transferred them onto these different women that you found later in the process, who then you refer to as like your second or your third mom. And I think that is just beautiful, because there were certain things that were working in that relationship and that you really enjoyed, and you managed to take those and take them with you into the future so that you could still live those values, just with a different person. And maybe one person was fulfilling these values, one person you were living those values with. And some you never had the fortune to experience with your own mother, but through the death, you realized that was actually what was missing. Yeah. And then you took those out and found somebody who could actually fulfill those, which is really beautiful.
Yeah.
And that really is essentially what I help people with as well in the Grief to Love programs, is to find a way that they can still live their own values. And the second part of your question is what you mentioned is that you said that grief really changed you, and that friend said how much it changed you, because the unconscious is always self-reflecting. And that's really what you did. Yeah. You really self-reflected and said, okay, how do I want to spend my life here? What is actually really important to me? It really makes us question everything. And we very often even see that after a significant loss, sometimes marriages break up because one of the people just go, actually, this has given me the kick that I needed to go, is this really how I want to spend the rest of my life?
Yeah.
Or is, yeah. So it questions everything. And we make different decisions and we change and because we question everything, we become a lot clearer about what is actually important to us. Yeah. And then we have the guts all of a sudden, because we realize we're going to run out of time eventually. Because as human beings, we're just so good at always like, oh, there'll be time. I'll do that next week, next year, whatever.
Yeah.
And it brings it home.
I'm not a fan. I don't really like the phrase, it's never too late, because one day it is too late.
Mm-hmm.
One day it will be too late.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Before we started, I mentioned the popular theory of grief, and you have a different look. So I would love to hear what your thoughts on the grief process and what, like I said, I'm not an expert on the topic. So you know what I want to hear.
I think the most popular theory on grief is the 5 stages of grief from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And I think it is a very misunderstood piece of work, because Elizabeth Kubler-Ross originally actually started working with the dying. And her first book actually was on death and dying. And she became a great advocate for the terminally ill, who back in the, I think, I don't know, 60s or whenever she did the work, were pretty much just shoved away in some dark corner of the hospital because there was nothing we could do for these people anyway.
Yeah.
And so she really became an advocate of these people. And that was a fantastic work. And she identified those 5 stages that the dying themselves go through. And that's where the 5 stages come from. And then later on, unfortunately, they adapted this and tried to put this over the grieving process. But I actually don't think, I think that's, what is it? Putting a square hole peg in a round hole kind of scenario. It doesn't work, because anybody who's ever experienced grief, there are so much more than 5 stages. Anxiety, overwhelm is not even part of those 5 stages. And all of those, there's so many huge emotions in grief that people don't even know they could experience. And just last year, just within 10 days of each other, I first lost my beautiful old therapy dog, who came to the clinic with me every day. And when I was doing Zoom sessions, she was always lying under my desk, and she was wonderful. And but we got her to 15 and a half, and it was time to go.
Yeah. That's a nice long life for a dog.
Yeah.
Good for her.
That's right. And then 10 days later, I got the completely unexpected phone call at 4 o'clock from my mum that my dad had passed away. And so that was a huge shock within just such a short period of time. And until I actually had experienced grief myself through my sister, my dog, and my dad, when people kind of said like grief rocks you and I was just shattered and on the floor, I got it, but I didn't really get it. And once I experienced it, I was like, oh, this is what you mean by that. Yeah. So those massively huge emotions. And a lot of those emotions that we actually experience when we lose somebody that is dear to us, they're actually not part of the five stages of grief model. And anxious, lost, completely confused, stressed, lethargic, that sense of it's all too much, completely disconnected and misunderstood. And there's so many different emotions. And for me, the grieving process is very individual. Yeah. And it is also very much what has happened in the person's life in the past. Have they as a child experienced loss? And how was that modeled out to them? Were they allowed to go to the funeral? Were they allowed to grieve? And there's a lot that kind of comes from the past of a person, what resources they have. And for me, at the end of the day, really the whole grieving process is about helping the unconscious with all of those objections. You know, when people have those internal dialogue, sometimes people get really hung up about one kind of question, as in, oh, what did that person mean with that last thing that they said? Or, oh my God, I shouldn't have said that or done that. Or if only I had insisted on them going to the doctors earlier. And they get, and no matter how much they have that conversation with themselves on a logical level, the unconscious just always comes up with that, yeah, but. And there are wonderful techniques on how we can help the unconscious actually tone that down so that it becomes a lot quieter and we almost get to a sense of, okay, we'll never know. And that's okay. Because usually the idea of the unconscious is, if I can just get the answer to this question, then I'll be okay.
Then
I can go to the next step. And then, of course, that'll be the next question or whatever. But again, there's again an intention behind wanting the answer. So for me, the way is, okay, great. What would having the answer do for you? And let's find a way to get there without necessarily needing the answer. And for me, I've developed like a roadmap through grief, which also helps people evaluate where they are. And the roadmap is not a straightforward line. That is, yeah, there is one main path through it. But like in every good forest or every good woods, there are lots of paths off to the side. Yeah. And some of them you just run around in one big loop and you end up where you were, or you go back a step. And the roadmap is available under grieftolove.com/roadmap. And so it's a wonderful tool where people in just like 5 minutes can find out where they are in their grieving process. And so that they don't become stuck in those really painful parts.
Yeah.
Because it's not really that people want to let go of their grief, because grief is honoring their loved one. It's remembering their loved one. But they don't want that excruciating, horrible pain anymore. Yeah. And people always think that it's an either or. It's either I'm grieving and I'm remembering my person, and I'm remembering the horrible last moments, and that what makes me still feel close to them. Or I stop grieving, they move into the very far distance and I'm not honoring them. And of course, I feel disloyal and guilty and da, da, da. But that's actually not true at all. It is that both is possible. We can really bring both together. We can honor the person, we can remember them. And through all of this, it's not about healing grief or letting go of grief. It's more about developing the resources so that we can carry the grief and still find a way to live a meaningful life that is inspired by the love that life and the love that we shared with the other person.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's really great. I wish you'd have been around 30 years ago, 27. Yeah. And it's so true, because I think when people, you always see these special on TV shows, I know you killed your wife because you're not crying or whatever. And I know that we all process, you know, grief in a different way. But when my mom died, Silky, I had lots of unanswered questions and it haunted me for a long time. It really did. And I think that stifled me and I didn't know what to do with it. I wasn't really surrounded with people that understood. They were like, you should, it's been 3 years, you need to move on. It wasn't until my dad died in 2008, I say I was 47 when he died, I wrote a letter to my mother.
Yeah.
I wrote a letter to my mother telling her dad had died. And I then asked a bunch of questions in the letter. And then I said, I know I will not get the answers, and I don't remember exactly what I said, but I said, I will let you go in peace. So I was able to let go of that part of it. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like so much better. I'm like, why didn't someone tell me this decades ago? But I also, she's always in the back of my mind. It's like this, it's weird. It's like this thing back here, even though she's been gone for 27 years. It's like this thing back here that I always a niggle. So she's there. And I love what you said, because I think a lot of people, especially when you get over 50, 60, 70, you're brought up in a generation of, okay, you've done enough crying about it. Like my college advisor said, I'd missed 2 weeks of school because she died when I was getting my undergrad degree. And he said, you really need to get back at it. What are you going to do? Sit on the couch all day and eat bonbons? I'm like, so what if I do?
You know? Exactly.
I liked the kick in the pants. I just thought he was a bit harsh in his approach to me. But yeah, people are just like, it's been 20 years. What are you still going on about? You know, and I get part of it. I think it's what, like you said, if you've got these questions that you just keep asking that you're not going to answer to, you're just torturing yourself with this.
Yes.
So how do people reconcile with that so they can feel like it's okay to let go of those questions and get on with their lives without feeling like they've forgotten their loved one?
I think really the most important thing is to ask themselves, okay, if I had that answer, what would that do for me?
That's a good question.
What would having the answer allow me to do? So that we get to the intention of what's behind that need for the answer. Because then, and that will be different for everybody.
Yeah.
But that is the important question. It's like, what would having the answer, what would that do for me?
That just dawned on me. That's a great question for the end of anything, not just death. Because we grieve lots of things. We grieve the end of a relationship. Yes. We grieve the end of, like, you know, our kids leaving home. We just, we grieve a lot of things as we get older. So I love that question.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would happen in the answer allow you to do?
Because when we understand how differently conscious and unconscious processes work, the conscious mind is just logic and rational thinking. Your unconscious is all the stuff that happens outside of your conscious awareness, all the stuff that happens automatically. And 99.9% of our unconscious processes work really well for us, because once you learned how to tie your shoelaces, it's a good thing that you do that unconsciously. It's kind of good. But ever so often, because the unconscious biggest job is to protect the person and to keep them safe. So that's why the unconscious is just so relentless, because it's, but I need this. I need the answer to this. I need the answer to this. I need the answer to this. But when we just argue with it, then it's, I always liken it a bit to the toddler in the questioning phase. Why? Oh my God. But and of course, when we just argue with it and say, look, you'll never know, da, 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 the unconscious goes, yeah, but why? It's not happy with it because it doesn't feel heard. But when we actually turn the question around and go, what would that actually do for you, having the answer? All of a sudden, the unconscious feels like it's being heard. And finally, my person is paying attention to me. Great. And already that usually brings it down a fair notch.
Yeah. Yeah. That's brilliant. So how do you, in your program, Grief to Love, what does that process look like? If someone were to come to you for help, what does that process look like for them?
Great. So I work online, obviously, and I work with people one-on-one. And I also work with people in groups. And the groups are actually really amazing, because I think everybody who's lost somebody feel like the other people don't get it. Yeah. The other people who haven't lost somebody who's that important to them, they're trying their hardest.
Yeah.
There's so much well-meaning advice out there, but they just feel like nobody gets it. And I've got small groups, and in those small group programs, because there are certain things that everybody goes through, like these questions, the sense of feeling guilty or disloyal if I have all of a sudden I had a smile on my face, or oh, I experienced some joy and I instantly get hit with a guilt stick about it. So these are things that are universal, and we do those in a group coaching program. And but as part of that group program, people also get one-on-one sessions with me at the end of the program, but we go through it. And of course, then people build this beautiful community, and they actually help each other out. They chat to each other and they go, oh, have you used this technique? Have you listened to this meditation recording? I think in your case, it will be that. And they really use all of those tools and techniques that I teach them. And then they remind each other of it. They're there for each other because, yeah, it's just a beautiful way of creating a community of people who all get it. And some people, they are in their horrible first year where they have to go through the first Christmas, the first anniversary, the first birthday, the first Mother's Day, the first which is a bit relentless. And some people, they are already a bit further down the track, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the third Christmas or the seventh Christmas is going to be any better. Yeah. Because people, that weird thing where people say time heals everything. No, it actually doesn't. It's more what we do in the time. And as you said earlier, you wish that somebody had told you decades ago to write a letter to your mum. I actually doubt that would have worked decades ago.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It may have. But it may have well been that through those years, you have collected the resources, you've done so much processing work on the inside, that then you were ready for it, and it did what it needed to do.
That makes sense.
And it sounds a bit weird when I say it this way. It's not about that my programs speed it up, but when we do stuff by ourselves, or we Google a lot of things, there's so much trial and error. And we just run down so many pathways, and like we land in the five stages of grief land, and we're wondering why we're grieving wrong because we're still stuck in that thing or whatever. And so my program is very much just about using the tools that actually work. I've been there with plenty of clients and myself, tested it all out on myself and on that. And yeah, so we just use those processes that work so that it doesn't have to take decades and decades to get to that point, because it's just a painful process otherwise.
I love what you said about community, because one of the things I harp on all the time, we just read about so many resources, regardless of what you're trying to work on in your life, whether it's quitting drinking, working through grief, figuring out who the hell you are after 50. We read all the books, we go to Dr. Google, we do all these things, and we don't feel like we get anywhere. But I have found that once you find that community, when you've got like really good resources behind you as well, because there's something, Silky, about someone saying, I know how you feel. I've been there. And you're just like, oh, Google has not been there. Don't listen to the Google. It's a good place to start if you're looking like that's what how they would find you possibly. But just to hear someone say, so that way I could finally lay down all these self-help books and quit looking and going to people and saying, you have been what I have been through, or just talking to someone. So I love, love, love that you're also building a community of support for people. That's fantastic.
I think that is such a key piece in that whole thing, and having the right resources behind it, as you said.
Exactly. So, it's very individualized, in particular grief. We all go through, I know a lot of people have had parents die and spouses die. The older you get, the harder it gets sometimes. But everyone goes, it's so individualized. But still, I, as someone who's lost their mother, understand how you feel as someone who's lost their father. It may not be the same, but I get it. I totally get it. So I think community together with resources are extremely important. I love that.
Thank you. And you've got a beautiful community as well of the redesigners. And
yeah, I love my community. And I always tell my podcast guests, expect to hear from me often because I love all my podcast guests. This has been such a great conversation. Is there anything else that you'd like to add? Feel free if you need to add something else, or I forgot a question, or is there something else you'd like to add before we
I think time? What is important is what I'd like to add really is also that there might be people listening to this who want to support somebody who's grieving.
Oh, yeah.
And they often feel that there's pressure on them. But the idea is because I need to fix this. I need to make my friend, my spouse, I want them to be better. Yeah. But you can't fix it. You can't fix it. The only way that you could fix it would be to bring their lost loved one back. And you actually can't do that. Yeah. And by only having that realization that there's absolutely nothing you can say that will make them feel better, that usually is a huge relief. There's nothing you can say to make them feel better. There's probably quite a few things that you can say to make them feel worse. So anything that starts with at least, don't go, because it's just not. It never ends well. But usually the best thing to do is to actually just be there, to be there and to ask a question. Do you today, right at this moment, do you need me to just have a light and fluffy conversation?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about what has happened? What do you need? I can do either. I can just be here and you can talk about it and I'll just be here for you. Or I can just distract you and tell you stupid stuff about what happened yesterday. By just asking those questions, it's beautiful. And or especially at the beginning stages when it just has happened in the first few months, in the first couple of weeks, everybody's there.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, people taper off a bit. And it's really important that in those moments, the friends and the close people are still there. And it can be just something as in, even if you're not in the same area, just send a card.
Yeah.
Send a postcard. Hey, I'm thinking of you. I know life is tough for you. I just want to let you know I'm thinking of you.
Yeah.
And there's just little things that really make a difference, because otherwise people actually feel like not only has their own world shattered, but that now they're actually losing so much more.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of simple things that we can do to support people who are grieving.
I love that you brought that up. That was something I hadn't even thought about in our conversation. But I had learned, especially after mom died, the best thing is just to be there. Ask them, can I sit with you? If you want to talk? Or like you said, I actually hung up on someone when we were at the house and called. She said she was a relative of mom's. I don't know. Didn't know her. She goes, she's in a better place now. And I'm like, no, she's not. I don't think she is. My mom was very religious and I just actually hung up on her, because at that time I was like, I don't give a shit. I don't know who you are. Exactly. You're not helping. And we had an uncle who dropped off a big bag of paper towels and toilet paper and different things, because there were a lot of people at the house, and he just left them at the door and left. And I thought, So as I'm telling the listeners this, because as I'm thinking about my process, is that it's just those really seemingly simple things that I really, truly appreciated. And going through that process with mom, I now understand. I have some friends going through some really horrible things. And I now know, first of all, if I know they need something, I just do it. I don't ask if they need toilet paper, or if they need a Starbucks card. I just do it. Because,
yes,
and you could probably speak to this too, a part of supporting is, it's so hard when someone says, what do you need me to do? And I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know.
So much crap in my head. I've got all this stuff going on that I don't know what I need. If you know the person really well, but then I loved what you said about just asking the question. Talk. Did we tell you a joke?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Dance
for you, whatever. Because that person will let you know. And then honor that. If they don't want to talk about it.
That's okay.
And you probably notice this too, Sophie. It's when people get uncomfortable in other people's angst and grief and sorrow.
Yeah.
We get super uncomfortable in that. And we like you said, we want to fix it.
But that is our own discomfort. That's our own inability. Yeah. That's on us.
That's more about us than anything else. Oh my gosh, what a great conversation. So for those of my listeners who want to know more about what Silky does and get in contact with her. I'm going to put all your information down below in the show notes and on the website. Great. So make sure that you peeps check that out. What a great conversation. I've just really enjoyed this. I thank you so much for reaching out, getting in touch with me, and us figuring out a time where we can meet where you didn't have to get up at 3 a.m.
But I think, thank you so much, Shelley. Honestly, I love your podcast. As I was listening to it, I know your audience would really benefit from hearing this because they are redesigning. Yeah.
Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm.